Jack, what do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blyton, and we're here to talk all things Disney, as always. And as always, here's my co-host. It's Mr. Aaron Goins. How's it going, man?
I'm feeling pretty special tonight, Riley.
Special? How so?
Yeah, because I now am the proud owner of premium Disney Plus content.
Premium.
Premium. What is the official term they're calling it? Premier Access?
I thought it was premium. Did I say it wrong?
Premium access. Now I'm questioning myself.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's premium like content.
It says it right on the top of my, you know. You now have access to premium content or premier content. I don't know.
Do you feel special?
I mean, I guess. I paid for it.
I paid $30 of my hard-earned money.
I better feel special.
Here's the thing. What I don't get is the, we talked about it briefly before, but I've been impressed actually by the number of people that I run to at work. And in my now, you know, very small social circle in the era of COVID, but that I've talked about that initially I heard a lot of whining about the $30 price point for Mulan, but now I'm hearing a lot of, well, you know, hey, let's like, if literally two of us went to the theater, that's our money right there. And if say nothing of the freaking $15 popcorn and $20 Coca-Cola.
I will say this though, because I thought the same way. I was like, it's a movie night,
yeah.
So it's
movie night.
It's cheaper than taking the family to the theater. Mm. But I don't typically take my family to the theater. I usually go just with my wife.
Ah, gotcha.
We leave the kids at home. So a movie like this, we probably would have gone just us two. Still would have been more than $30. But watching it at home with the kids is a whole different experience than going to the theater without the kids. And I think in this movie, I would have preferred to just go date night. Me and her go to a theater and watch it in that kind of environment than sitting on our couch trying to wrangle our kids, get distracted, you know, that kind of thing. So.
It is the house. We are going to give our full review of both our experiences watching, you know, a premier access, you know, premium Disney film, their debut of the system with Mulan, both the process and the film itself. And I think you might be a little surprised at... And Aaron, even I haven't talked to you about my full... We've texted a little bit, but I haven't... I've saved a few stories that I wanted to tell you here on the podcast to kind of describe the experience. Because I had some surprises, too, as far as what it's like to see a brand new Disney film rented in your very home versus going out to the theater. So I'm excited to talk about that. But before we do... We should probably talk some news. There's a little bit of a few news stories that I wanted to hit with you, Aaron, before we jumped into that. And particularly, I wanted to get your thoughts on the update. We have updates for the Star Wars Hotel.
Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser is a completely new type of experience. For the first time, we're going to invite guests to become the hero of their own Star Wars adventure, and you can do it in whatever way you like. They will live aboard a starship for 2 days and two nights. When guests arrive at Walt Disney World, they will go to this terminal, think of it as a small private cruise terminal, if you will, and you and your family will then be ushered into a launch pod. And this is a small capsule where you will then simulate the experience of blasting off into space. There will be a window overhead until you eventually see our ship, the Halcyon, in the distance. When the doors of the launch pod open and you emerge into the atrium, everything in the spaceship wants to reinforce that feeling of you're on a star cruiser in a galaxy far, far away.
Construction is underway. My favorite Twitter account in the entire world, you know him, you love him, BioReconstruct, has new aerial overviews of the construction of the Galactic Star Cruiser. This is the first set of photos that actually shows the full property. This includes the road where guests will presumably, you know, quote-unquote, board the Halcyon Starship. I think that's how they're going to pronounce it. I'm just guessing. The Halcyon Starship for your interstellar journey through the galaxy. Look, are you surprised, man, that this is, of all the construction projects in a crashed economy, they're going with the super high-end premium, you know, Star Wars hotel? I don't know. I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's still, you know, the ongoing construction's happening all over the place at Disney right now. And some of those big rides that they've announced and stuff. I know some stuff's been put on pause, but it seems like some of these bigger projects are still moving forward, although maybe just not getting talked about as much.
Yeah.
So, and this is one, I mean, it's obviously attached to one of their bigger properties that they paid a lot of money for, and they want to see this be successful. And, I mean, obviously we're excited about it.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
I'm still very eager to hear kind of more details around, like, price point and all of that. But it is cool to see the building going up, you know, scaffolding, and there's like some, you know, that wall in the one shot.
Yeah.
That big, like, concrete wall. It's like, how, I'm just very curious how they're going to work it. So it's kind of, so it tricks you into thinking you're actually kind of going into the ship.
I'll be very intrigued. It is definitely taking shape. I'm surprised it's cool to see how far the construction has come and not, you know, one of the reasons I had to include this, Aaron, is, of course, this is probably the single, you know, most hyped we are about a non-park, I should say, expansion that they're working on. So I'm really excited that they're still doing it. And when you look at the, the shore excursion concept, I that's where I think the greatest value in this experience comes is, speaking of Premier Access, if there's a special experience that you don't get going to Galaxy's Edge unless you go to this. And that maybe that will be when we first begin to see Galaxy's Edge live up to those initial promises of immersion when it comes to experience plots. You know, when everyone was talking about Galaxy's Edge being Westworld of Disney, where you would be living out your story experience while you're in the park. That never really came to full fruition. And I think that's the greatest potential here.
Right. I'm still curious to see how far they go with it. Like, when you do your excursion, do they let you out of Galaxy's Edge? Can you go to Toy Story Land? Does that break the immersion?
Yeah.
Do they have guards that are standing there like, sorry, you can't leave this area because you're part of the, you know, you're part of the ship crew or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I imagine that they won't go that crazy with it because, you know, people are going to pay enough money to want to, you know, experience all of Hollywood Studios and not just one area.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have a link because some of the pictures that we've been talking about, you can actually reference it while you're listening in the show notes here. But he actually, by Reconstruct, has one of the scaffolding, which is kind of pretty cool. It shows this side of the wall where they have trees at the left of the wall that block the view of the building itself. So upon check-in, guests would transfer up and into the Star Wars timeline. So you can kind of see a little bit of what that initial entrance would look like.
It's probably going to look, I would imagine that if you're supposed to think you're going into a ship, you know, that there's going to be some kind of, you know, exterior, you know, look to it that's like, okay, this is a ship that has landed. We're going up into that ship. The wall will be, you know, kind of maybe looking like some kind of docking thing that it's, you know, coming out of.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so you can continue to have that immersion once you go in. But Disney's really clever about, you know, kind of sight lines and hiding what they don't want you to see. They do it pretty well. So it will be really cool to see the finished product. And then, you know, we'll be willing to kind of fork out that cash because I know, like, even just some of the leaked price points were definitely like, oh, wow. Like, I'm going to have to go with some friends and split the cost of this thing.
Yeah, no, we've had that group text going for a while when it actually does happen. I mean, and now that'll be our sort of next, you know, Star Wars celebration since it was canceled this week as a gathering of Star Wars friends. So I think that'll be kind of cool next year, assuming that it opens on time. So that's the cool news. So not so cool news is Mickey's Very Merry Christmas, as well as the 2020 Candlelight Processional at Epcot, have been hashtag it. COVID kinkst. There's no big surprise. Of course, we had the cancellation of the not so scary Halloween party. So, I wonder, the only question I have for you, Aaron, because you know it's kind of a big whoop kind of story. It's yet another cancellation of these kinds of events. But do you think that they are not running these events because of concern with crowds or managing it? Or is it because they're too expensive to put on and they're not going to see that much of a boost in attendance anyway, so they're just canceling it for the checkbook?
I think that's probably the main reason is that they don't think that they're... I mean, you know, we've seen that attendance is way lower than what they expected.
Yeah.
And so these events would probably not be that well attended. Why take all the time and effort to put on these shows? I mean, a lot of the big thing about these events is there's a special parade. Well, they're not doing parades, but there's a special fireworks show. Well, they're not doing fireworks. So what really becomes special about it other than the decorations, which are going to be up anyways? So I think that what they're going to do is, and they're already doing it with the Halloween stuff, is they're going to still try to have that kind of Halloween vibe all through Magic Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
and still do... They'll probably still do those character kind of processions where they'll still have the characters in costume. They're going to still allow kids to wear costumes in the park. They've already announced that, where typically they wouldn't allow that. So they're going to spread out what would have been usually reserved just for the parties. They're going to spread out to just the general, you know, public and say, if you come to Disney during Halloween time, you know, you can wear a costume. Or if you come during Christmas, we're going to have... you know, cookies and hot cocoa here, whatever. They're going to do some of the things that you typically would only be able to do at the parties. So I think they're smart about how they're handling it.
Your consolation prize at the parks really seems to be Epcot, because they are doing Festival of the Holidays. And so that will include some of the, you know, your favorite holiday kitchen booths. They have like the Bavaria holiday kitchen booth that should be back. They'll have some limited Christmas themed entertainment, like the Voices of Liberty. We'll be out at Epcot. Joyful will be performing some like R&B, gospel, and contemporary Christmas music. So they're going to have it looks like a pretty good selection of entertainment, of Christmas-themed entertainment at Epcot. So that seems to fit very well. So it's, I guess, a little consolation prize without those two parties. And that's so funny because like me and Savannah, literally last year we went to both. We went to the Food and Wine Festival for the Wine and Dine half. And we literally, while we were there that weekend, we're enjoying it so much, decided to just as a couple, just the two of us, go down again for Mickey's Very Merry, which is when we first went to see Rise of the Resistance. So we kind of did that all at once in December. And that was the first time I had ever been to it. So I had an absolute blast. But it was my first time at either of those two parties were last year, and we enjoyed them very much. Although I will say, of the two, the Very Merry Christmas party was, I don't want to say vastly superior, just vastly superior.
You just like Christmas better than Halloween.
I think so.
What it comes down to.
I think it really does, because I mean I had a great time with you guys. At the not so scary, but I don't know. It's just some of the there weren't as many offerings as I was kind of expecting. Although, if I'm fair, they both are just kind of reskinning the park themed with the holiday. There's not a lot extra. You get candy at Halloween, you get cookies at Christmas. You know, it's not too different. But you're right, I do just love Christmas.
Like, and you didn't go. To be fair, you didn't really go all in on the whole costume thing.
Oh, for the Halloween party? That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Like, that's because I know the first time, I've been to that party twice, and the first time I did a little bit more of like a legit costume with my wife, and we enjoyed it. I felt like you felt like more part of the event if you're really in costume. I think in this last one, none of us really, we kind of all cheated and just did really simple costumes and kind of, I mean, I think I took my costume off like within an hour.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we've got some news on Disneyland. Aaron, I want you to actually, if you don't mind introducing this, I was kind of curious what you thought about this news. This literally was just breaking earlier today, but the California governor has given us a little tidbit, at least and what the current status and negotiations are with Disneyland, because it's been all this talk of Disney World, which has now been open for some time, but we really hadn't heard a peep from Disneyland until recently.
Yeah, I mean, California has been a lot slower to kind of open than Florida for various reasons. And, you know, everyone's kind of anticipating the opening of Disneyland. And right now it seems like there's kind of a light at the end of the tunnel, I guess you could say, as they're starting to think about, you know, what the state looks like and how that, you know, impacts the parks.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Earlier today, as we're recording this, Governor Gavin Newsom commented on the ongoing progress being made with the theme park industry and noted, here we go, there are still some open-ended areas in the negotiations since our last major update, and this is straight from the Disney Food blog. It seems that California, as well as Orange County, which of course where Disneyland is, are seeing a decline in positive cases. Orange County was approved today to advance from the purple tier widespread to the red tier substantial. So that's, you know, it's like a foreign language. Orange tier substantial.
Yeah, they even have a, you know, color-coded picture of California here.
Yeah, look at that. Which
wants to look at.
Which most of it should be flaming red, evidently, right now, because it is not pretty. These days.
Oh, man. Yeah, California. Jeez.
Disneyland doesn't.
The Northwest is struggling.
Yeah, but basically, what that actually means is Orange County, where Disneyland is, has shown consistent improving data in the areas of new cases per 100,000. Which, fun fact, in my day job with the Department of Defense, that's exactly how we make decisions on training, traveling, people going from one, being transferred from one base to another. We literally look at a two-week trend of positive case test rate per 100,000. And that seems to be the sort of standard. So maybe they're just going off of that for the numbers for Disneyland.
Yeah. And he specifically mentions theme parks.
Yeah, you know, that's encouraging.
In his quotes.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good sign, because I think the trend, especially because LA has been just so bad, I was kind of ready to just assume it would be at least next year before Disneyland opens. That's what I was assuming. But who knows? Maybe they will be able to open in some limited capacity before the holidays. And I think that'd be a huge deal for them if they were able to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure Disney is hoping that that's the case. You know, right now, it just seems like the attendance is just so low, even though Florida opened. So, you know, Disney's probably hoping to get revenue any way they can. And the holidays tends to be a time of year that Disney sees a spike in, you know, attendance. But we'll see, this year might be different because, you know, people aren't going to be traveling as much for the holidays. And obviously, you know, depending on what cases look like for COVID, as we get closer to November, December, it's going to really impact their bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. I hope they're able to open. I mean, largely speaking, I'm hoping the trends can kind of keep going down, because overall trends have been better as we keep fighting through this thing. I'm always whether it's Disney or whether it's like the corporation, the parks, or whether it's just human innovation in general, I'm confident that we can figure out ways to do it. It is sort of a learn as you go, try to stay safe, but still be open. But I think World has done, and I'll be honest, I think they've done a very good job navigating very limited capacity. And this is what they wanted. This is what Disney wanted. They did not want the slew of headlines and frankly responsibility, but let's be honest, a big part of this is PR, of like the mass outbreak center that would be the Disney parks. Like, yep, Disney opened this weekend, next weekend Florida cases up by 60%, all concentrated in Orange County. You know, they did not want that, and that they've very successfully navigated. You don't see any meaningful difference in numbers surrounding the park attendance in Florida, and I think that's a really good thing. And I think that's a combination of Disney's approach, which we, you know, had Scott Reifen on the show a while ago talking about it, because he kind of got an in-person view of that, But it's also a testament to, I mean, frankly, the low attendance numbers and people not really wanting to take that risk. Are you, Aaron, are you still going? October? You still shooting for it? Maybe?
Still up in the air. It's mostly around if I think my daughter will wear a mask.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty, from what I hear, and I know there were some news reports that kind of caught some headlines.
Yes.
Around a family that tried to go with a disabled child, and Disney's, you know, staying pretty, you know, they're sticking to that rule that they have to wear a mask no matter what. And so that's probably going to be, if we feel like she's going to be able to wear a mask that whole time or not.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm curious. I mean, to put you on the spot, I know, because it's a tough decision. But hopefully, the cases keep trending in the right direction. We can actually get an in person account of how it goes. But we'll obviously be standing by for that.
Aaron? Yeah, definitely. And I think no matter what, it sounds like Victoria has already signed off on the, if we don't go as a family, that I can still bring Quinn. And just go maybe for a shorter trip. So I think we'll be down there no matter what.
Okay, that'd be good. That'd be good. Nice. Yeah. Well, Mr. Goins, shall we talk some Mulan?
Yeah, man, we paid the money. We might as well talk about it.
Let's do it.
You will die pretending to be something you are not.
Here I stand, proof that there is a place for people like us.
A girl threatens our plans.
A warrior.
Disney Mulan, available on Disney Plus, Premier Access. Sorry, Aaron, it's
is it Premiere?
It is. I just saw it.
Right, so. I'm glad you confirmed it.
It's confirmed. But yeah, it was, Aaron, that's how I'm leading into the segment.
I don't know where to start.
I didn't like it. That's the spoiler alert up front. And by the way, spoilers for the movie. We're going to talk spoilers.
Yeah, we are going to talk spoilers. Mm. What was your? So you said you had a story or something about kind of your viewing experience.
I'll get the, I guess the heads up out of the way. The disclaimer. That's the word I'm looking for. I'll get the disclaimer out. If Aaron and I don't like a movie and you do, we are 100% cool with that. And I'm actually interested to really get y'all's feedback as we give our review to see if we're off base, because we're both, I think, going to be kind of in a similar spot based on our texts. For me not being the biggest fan of this movie. So shoot us an email, mouseandcastlepodcast@gmail.com. And that way we can get y'all in on this too for the next episode. But so here's the deal. When you're talking Premier Access, it kind of became its own event. It becomes a sort of industry test of will this work. Earlier this summer, right at the beginning of the outbreak, I guess spring really, at the beginning of the COVID outbreak, Trolls was almost immediately released onto video on demand and broke all kinds of freaking records. Like, I think is Trolls DreamWorks? I think it's DreamWorks. I want to say it is, but yes. I know it's not. Yeah. So they dumped a ton of advertising into home video and social media. More on that later with Mulan. But they basically, anything that they would have done to try to get to push people to theaters, they pushed all of that budget, all that remaining marketing budget into, like, hey, no, go download this movie for $20, video on demand. And it kind of blew anything else like it before out of the water. And that kind of became the template. I saw people putting their eyes on that of, like, okay, what's the first Disney thing? And then they released, and we talked about it on the show, the new Pixar film, Onward, almost immediately onto Disney Plus. However, for free, they just very quickly put it from theaters. But this is the first time Disney has jumped directly to video on demand release, and it's been a matter of time. I've had a couple of films that we're waiting on, Black Widow being one of them, but this is the one that they decided to take the plunge on. And it was kind of interesting, because as I was talking to people about it, everybody was kind of talking about the sort of the principle behind it of like, is this the going to be the new way we want to watch movies instead of the theater, the comfort of your own home? You don't spend for the freaking expensive popcorn. We hosted what I thought would be the perfect ideal experience. Movie night with a couple friends, a couple coworkers that we knew and could come to the small gathering here at the apartment. Of course, COVID safety being primary. So it was all like, it was like four or five friends that we had over. And we're like, we're going to do movie night. We're going to host. We're going to make homemade pizza, which we did. It was delicious. And we're going to have Mulan. And one of them's a coworker of mine. And she's like the biggest Mulan fan ever. And so she was super hyped, really excited to go. And so that's the context in which we sat down and watched the movie. And the movie, I would best describe my sort of like very brief review summary is, it's a perfectly adequate action movie that has a lot of the inspiring elements of Mulan with a lot of the magic and likability of the characters stripped away. Like that's and music, obviously, being a big part of that magic of the original movie. Where it succeeds in ways the original already did. And where it innovates, it innovates in the area of delving into some of the more original mythology behind Mulan, which is kind of interesting. But where it fails is in its, you know, surgical removal of all of the magical fun of the original film. That's my opinion of the new Mulan movie. Before I like jump into all the details, I'm curious about your experience, Aaron, like going into what you're expecting. And I know you did it kind of as a family movie night. How was it? And what was your kind of overall impression of the film after it?
Yeah. So for us, I mean, like I was kind of saying at the top of the show, you know, we typically would see a movie like this, just me and my wife.
Mm.
And so being at home with the kids, you know, we were excited for it. You know, we always get excited for these movie nights. We've done pretty much every movie that's come out during this pandemic that, you know, we did it with Trolls. We did it with Onward.
Oh, you guys were part of that. Okay.
You know, I even bought Onward before they put it on Disney Plus, even though it was only a couple weeks early, just because I wanted to have that kind of like opening night experience.
Mm.
And so we've been doing it for all these movies. And so we were excited. You know, we planned a movie night. And, you know, I think part of it was doing it there with the kids and the distractions. And it's different. When you're at a movie theater, there's an expectation that nobody talks, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what your experience was watching it with other young adults. But when you watch a movie at home, there's just a little bit more freedom there. Mm. Where you're kind of making commentary during the movie. Maybe you're getting up and you know, going and doing something. So you're not really focused on the movie as much as you would be if you were kind of in a seat in a theater, lights low. So it's definitely a different enough experience that I would never say, oh, this is now my preferred way of watching new releases. I would always prefer to go to the theater than watch it on my own couch. I like the ability to watch it on my own couch, but I would prefer to go to the theater to see these, you know, at least for the first showing.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, but as far as overall impression of the movie, I think I had a similar reaction as you. This movie is kind of working at a, you know, disadvantage a little bit because it's trying to live up to a movie that all of us, especially big Disney fans, you know, we're already so super familiar with the animated version that this movie, you know, it tried to do something completely different and it's telling a story we already know. So it kind of takes away the suspense or excitement a little bit because you already kind of know what's going to happen. But then you're also, you know, you're looking at it in it's a completely different format. You know, it's not like when you watch Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast, the live action remakes of those, where it's like, okay, they did a little bit, they changed different things, but it's got the same songs and you know, pretty much the same characters. Mm. And so you still have all those nostalgic
Beyonce's elements here randomly in the middle of the movie, but hey, whatever.
So this movie didn't really kind of tap into that nostalgia as much. So it was already kind of at a disadvantage for me.
Yeah.
And then because they didn't do anything in my mind, you know, in my opinion, they didn't really do anything unique to the live action film that did better than the animated film.
Yeah.
That I just felt like it was lacking all the way up until the end. I was just kind of waiting for that moment or that character to get me excited. And You know, I think like, you know, it just, it came across as really flat and bland.
Yeah. I'll play devil's advocate here for a second, since I know we had kind of similar impressions of the film, but I've noticed a lot of, it's gotten a lot of positive reviews, and a lot of those positive reviews are about the director's willingness to really take a left turn away from what the original movie and not have Mulan, you know, burst into song and she can just be a badass without having to like go through all of the wackiness of a lot of the original characters and scenes, and it kind of distills it down to her evolution from misfit to warrior. And that's a compelling story, and I'm not sure why the delivery didn't land for me as much as I wanted it to.
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of changed what Mulan was, you know, in the, because the animated film, for me, it wasn't even a matter of, I knew that this movie wasn't going to have songs. I went in knowing that. It's not like it surprised me.
Yeah.
You know, I knew Mushu wasn't going to be there. So you kind of like, you kind of prepare yourself, okay, it's a different take. They're not going to do music. But they really kind of right from the beginning threw me for a loop, because you have that scene where she's running around trying to catch the chicken as a very young girl, and she basically has magical powers.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, okay, that's different. And then the whole movie was really kind of focused on the idea that she had chi, and there were other characters that had this, and That was a direction they went for me personally, that I was just kind of like, eh. I always liked the idea that Mulan wasn't magical. There was nothing special about her. You know, she was just a girl trying to protect her dad, and, you know, discovered her own worth through that experience, and proved herself. But she wasn't like some kind of kick-ass warrior during that movie. She did, you know, she did fight in the war and make some really clever decisions and use the cleverness of her decisions to defeat more powerful enemies, but she wasn't magical.
Yeah.
And that's what I didn't like that really at right from the get go. I'm just like, wait, she's a Jedi, you know, like,
don't feel.
Well, yeah, they did. They literally had a scene where her dad's telling her to hide her powers. And I'm like, yeah, this is kind of like Frozen. I feel like I'm watching like Elsa kind of mixed with Rey. You know, with the trappings of a Chinese film, and it felt weird. It felt cobbled together. It didn't feel like the movie had a really solid voice.
Well, what it matched against that I thought what the director, I think, was trying to do was sort of juxtapose her against the witch, and how they both had similar experiences growing up, but they yet made different decisions. One choosing evil, the other choosing good, which I understand what they're going for there. I think what might have made it work more is, I'm totally backseat quarterbacking here, but it's exactly what went through my mind immediately after watching. I was like, what if that opening sequence wasn't Mulan, but we all thought it was? Instead, it was the young witch who would then be misunderstood, and it would take the audience a minute to figure out, oh, this is a different story, and you can kind of see that parallel more directly, and that would make her more of a tragic figure when she dies at the end of the film. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the idea of that, you know, kind of developing some of these characters more might have helped.
Yeah,
I think, you know, it did feel like there wasn't a big variety of personality types throughout the film. It was very serious. They threw in a little bit of humor here and there, but a lot of the jokes didn't really land for me. And there were a couple times I smiled. You know, there was a character named Cricket, and he was supposed to be Lucky. I'm like, okay, that's clever.
Yeah.
You know, and he was kind of funny.
Ling was kind of funny.
But there really wasn't any, you know, it was a great cast. They had a great cast. But they didn't really vary the character types. They were very much all serious people, and there wasn't like a very kind of gregarious character or a very you know, whatever, I don't know, but just different character types that you would kind of expect when you're watching like a big budget film. But they were all very stoic. Even Donnie Yen, like, he was he was Donnie Yen, but he, and he had some cool fight scenes, but he wasn't a very interesting character.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think you've accurately kind of hit the nail on the head with the limitation of the adaptation that they were trying to do. And that's really, I like, the best way I can probably put it is that what this Milan was missing, I felt, especially as a result of the sort of superpower subplot, which kind of strips away, it strips away the heart of the movie, I think, in a lot of ways, which it's sad to say, but I think the director's was attempting to make the film feel more grounded. In fact, he said as much in some interviews that I was watching after, like, feel more grounded, more real, and thus us be more connected to her as a character. But in so doing, what I think he did was he kind of left the movie a bland shell of what it once was. And to be honest, let's give him some credit. Mulan's probably one of the hardest films to adapt to live action. Because, like, Beauty and the Beast, it's a straight-up classic musical, right? That's a pretty straightforward, can they sing? Can they? Do you have a great magnetic cast? All right, you can't really screw it up. But where the original film's magic comes in the songs and the cast, especially, and the humor. So the removal of Mushu, I'm not saying including them is the right answer, but the consequence of removing Mushu, the funny cricket, all the ancestors, right? Like the ghostly ancestors that sort of illustrate her family's past. It just kind of leaves it an empty shell with cool action scenes.
Right. And it could have been done that way. Honestly, I feel like it's not the failure in this movie. And once again, it's my opinion. Some people really like this movie, I'm sure. So I'm not saying in general it's a failure. But for me as a fan, it didn't reach my expectations. But the failure to me wasn't in that, oh, well, they didn't do the songs and Mushu wasn't there, so I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was more about, I could have totally been on board with Mulan as a straight up, like, epic action film. But even though that's the direction they went, I felt like they didn't nail it. There were elements missing that I would have liked to see. Even in, like, her as a character, she, you know, they gave her this kind of superpower type thing, and you got to see her do some pretty cool fighting stuff, but they utilized, like, that one move she did multiple times where she's doing the whole kicking the spear.
Yeah.
And she flips up and kicks the spear, and she does that, and then she does it again. And then at the end, the emperor throws the arrow up, which I don't know how he knew she had that power because he's never met her before, but he throws the arrow up and she does the same thing. She flip kicks it and into the guy. And it felt like even that, like, they just didn't, it was like, it was too predictable certain times. Like, it's just like, man, they just didn't do it as good as they could have, I guess.
I mean, I think here's the thing. I'll poke you a little bit, Aaron. Cause I think if we were more connected to the characters, we'd be cheering her on and saying, yeah, it's freaking badass. Look at the flippy kicky thing. Boom, take him out. Like, it's cheesy, but, like, we love cheesy movies. It's Disney. But I think the way the humor throughout the original, that was how we kind of came to empathize with the characters. Like, just little lines in the music, like, boy was I a fool in school for cutting Jim. It's the silliest line of, like, oh, it's a fat joke or an out of shape joke, I guess. But it makes you sort of empathize with the character a little bit. I think they did that with Ling. Ling was kind of a sympathetic figure and kind of I feel like there could have been more with him, but he was likable to me, but they never quite made it there with, I think, any of the other characters. And I don't know. So the ancestors, like, they're really goofy, but the ancestors show in kind of great personal detail the sort of the generational expectation of conformity for Mulan and her overcoming that. And then the ancestors kind of cheering her on give a sense of fulfillment where you're just connected to the character more, I think.
And even the original performance in the animated film for Mulan, like, what I decided to do right after I watched the live action, I still had enough time, is, like, I'm going to watch the animated one now. You know, like, I just kind of wanted to watch it. And, like, right away, you know, that performance, the voice performance for that character, is just so much more engaging. Like, she's got so much more personality right away.
Yeah.
You know, just right at the beginning. And I don't know. I kind of was like, it was like a breath of fresh air to kind of see the original, because this one just fell really flat with some of the performances. And I'm sure, I mean, once again, they had a really good cast, so I'm not necessarily blaming the cast, but for whatever reason, the direction they went with, you know, how they wanted these characters to act, I would have liked to see a little bit more personality, honestly, from pretty much all the characters. I can't nail down, like, usually if I watch a movie, even a movie I don't like, there's a couple characters that really stand out where I'm like, I did like that performance.
Yeah.
In this movie, I really can't. Like, there's not a character that I'm like, yeah, they did really, really well.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Cricket. I don't know. He might have been the best.
I'll give credit to...
When I thought he died at the end, I was like, no, not Cricket.
Yeah, that's actually true. Literally, that was one thing that got a visible, audible reaction from the living room was everybody like, not Cricket. but... I'll give that shout out. I think they did it. I'll give the credit where credit's due. I think they did it with Ling. Jimmy Wong played Ling, and you know, his sort of the way he stands up for Mulan. I really like that. I thought that made him very likable and kind of courageous character. But short of that, they didn't do so hot. I'm at the risk of beating a dead horse. I feel like I can wrap up my thoughts at least, Aaron, by saying I sort of in nebulous terms talked about the music. And where it conveys emotion, but I think, again, I'm not saying the solution is like put the songs back in, but I think the best illustration is reflection, because in the song it chronicles Mulan's intense personal struggle in playing a part, right, being expected to, you know, play a certain role in the family, but not just that expectation. That's just a cultural sort of surface level. It digs into why that makes her feel unseen, like her as a person, and to be unseen, to be unknown, that's to feel removed from your family and in terms of love, like, and familial affection, especially your mother, and her father is the one who recognizes what's special in her, but he's not willing to let it shine, and that's all shown beautifully through the lyrics of, like, the idea, when will my reflection show who I am inside? It perfectly brings us into Mulan's world and how she's feeling in that moment. And its removal leaves us to kind of fill in the blanks as to how she's feeling in those moments. And that's where it just doesn't quite bring us into her world and on her side in the same way that the original did. I think that was the biggest issue, because I wanted to cheer for Mulan more. I wanted to be more invested in her journey and her success and her, you know, kicking ass and taking out the bad guys at the end and, you know, letting the hair down, let it go. You know, like, literally, I wanted to be there in those moments, but it's just harder to be there when that emotion's been removed from the setup.
Yeah, I can see that. There were a couple cool shout or like nods to the original that I liked.
Yeah,
the you know, Mulan's horse was almost identical to how it appears in the animated film, which I thought was pretty cool. In like the way that the horse's coloration, like the black horse with the white stripe on the face. There was a lyric dropped at one point where he said something about, like, it's not about what she looks like. All I care about is what she cooks like.
Oh yeah,
he says that in the movie, which is, you know, pulled from the song from the animated film.
I didn't catch that. That's pretty good.
What else was there? I mean, obviously you had the cameo of the original Mulan at the end, which was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That made me smile.
Yeah, Ming-Na Wen. Yeah.
And then there was one other thing that stood out to me that kind of was a reference to the animated film, but now I'm blanking on it.
But it
was cool to see that even though it was a major departure from the animated film, they still put elements in there to kind of give it, you know, a nod.
It is. They definitely put so much effort, and I always feel bad in some ways because so much effort and heart and blood, sweat and toil goes into making films like this, and so I thought they could have, you know, made it more magical. I say, sitting here in my little podcast studio, I kind of hate being right. That guy in some ways, but I think that it may be a good way forward as we look at some of these live action remakes, and maybe not even looking at these live action remakes, maybe we should turn around, look back at the past, and maybe understand and appreciate Mulan's a better movie than I remembered and appreciated. Like, wouldn't you say so? Did this movie give you a better appreciation for the original?
I think so. I mean, because Mulan doesn't rank super high on my list of like favorite Disney animated films, but now, yeah, now that this one came out, it kind of has made me reevaluate the original. And you do forget about certain elements of a movie or how much you enjoyed it until it's challenged with a live action film. Or like when you tell me that you think Beauty and the Beast is better live action, I'm like, no, Beauty and the Beast is amazing as an animated film.
I'll still stand by that one.
Well, I'm sure you wouldn't say that about Mulan now.
No, I would not. But yeah, man, I did enjoy the movie. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed watching it. We had a great time, everybody, watching it. But I will say this, our group did the exact same thing at the end of the movie. We were like, you know, throughout the movie, everybody kept quoting things from the animated movie that weren't in this one. There's just a bunch of big Disney fans who grew up with the movie, of course. But now, they at the end of the movie, we just had to, you know, cue up the music. Kind of like I did just now.
It's hilarious, yeah.
I wonder how many people did that. It's like flipped from the new one to the original on Disney Plus after. I think that's got to be a thing that was the thing. Mr. Goins, I think that's going to bring up the final, the last bits of this episode. Any final thoughts on Mulan or shout outs to where you want people to follow you online?
Quick final thoughts, just like for a positive note. I think that they did really well with the, you know, kind of environment, and you know, the way the movie looked was pretty awesome. It has some great visuals, and it's definitely worth a second watch. Like, I haven't had a chance to watch it again. And so I tend to be a little bit more critical on a movie when I've only seen it once. And then, you know, watching it a couple more times helps. So I definitely think this review may be a little bit harsher than, like, my views on it, you know, maybe a couple months down the road after I've seen it a few more times.
Mm.
The other thing I'll say, too, is it definitely wasn't a kid's movie. Like, and not by for any reason of, you know, kind of content, but just it's just not super engaging. My son, who is 8, didn't find it interesting at all.
Oh, yeah.
So it's definitely, if you're thinking about, oh, we're going to, if you still haven't decided to drop the $30 and to watch it as a family film, this actually might be one to wait on because it's, I don't know that younger kids at least would be super engaged watching it, and they probably wouldn't be like wanting to watch it multiple days in a row like they would with a Frozen movie.
That's fair.
But yeah, as far as closing out the show, yeah, you can find me at AV Goins on Twitter, and got a couple other podcasts out there too. But
yeah, if you're into the Doctor Who thing, of course, you've got, well, actually, where's, do you have any new episodes coming up?
We did an episode that was a David Tennant retrospective. We did our favorite David Tennant episodes, and that one's been out for a couple weeks now, but you know, could always use more listens. So yeah, if you guys like David Tennant, go check out Bad Wolf Radio. We just did a David Tennant episode, and we also have my podcast Star Wars Bookworms, which we are doing all the latest book releases, and we're pretty up to date. So if you're reading the more current novels, check out that show.
Nice. Yep, do it. We'll you can toss links in there for the show notes as well. You can follow Mouse and Castle. It's just at Mouse and Castle across the social medias. You can also head over to mouseandcastlepodcast.com, where you'll find the links to everything we talked about in the show and all of our social media and the Mouse and Castle newsletter. So you can sign up for all of those things at mouseandcastlepodcast.com. You can also find me at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, on the Twitters and Instagram. But until next time, boy, was I a fool in school for cutting gym. That's how we're leaving. Guys, appreciate you listening. We'll be back next week on the Mouse and Castle podcast. You must be swift at the coursing river, with all the force of a great typhoon, with all the strength of a raging fire, mysterious as the dark side of the moon.
swift as a coursing river, with all the force of a great typhoon, with all the strength of a raging fire, mysterious as the dark sky.
I was going to fade out, and then I couldn't.
Yeah, I was like, wow, he's really letting this audio go for a while. Like,
I was just jamming out.
I thought maybe he just walked away.
No, but